my name is Sydney, and I'm super excited to talk to someone who's actually a part of the Shadow and Bone fanfiction, unlike me, a liar who just likes the TV show.
Hello there. I am Fairy Tales of Forever on AO3. That's where all my good stuff is. I've written a lot of Grishaverse, Shadow and Bone, Six of Crows fanfiction, as well as a whole host of other fandoms.
Awesome. Well, I am alone today, unfortunately, but that means I get today's author all to myself. And I, for one, am very excited because, as I mentioned before, I somehow managed to get you on the podcast right when the new season of Shadow and Bone is about to be released. And as an individual who's not truly deep in the fandom, I am very excited to talk to not only someone in the fandom, but also someone who has written a very popular fanfic for the fandom. She is the author of We're Still In It, But In A Minute, Regardless in the Ring, and the best worst kept secret in Ketterdam. Welcome, Fairy Tales of Forever. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited. Also super flattered to be considered popular. That's a new thing. Yes. For me. So yeah, I am deep in the fandom.
Amazing.
I'm one of that flavor of ADHD folk who will just obsess over something for a limited amount of time, which can be dangerous when you're writing fan fiction, because when the interest goes away, you're halfway into a project and then it's like, oh no, what do I do now? But luckily we're not there yet.
That's good.
And I have been like obsessively keeping up with all of just the new, like the trailers and the new spills from the season, and the premiere was just the other night, so we got all sorts of new content and cast interviews and things. It was very exciting.
Everyone looked so good. Have you been seeing the interviews with specifically the person who plays Alina? I don't remember the name. And then Ben Barnes. And they, like, he'll, like, hold her hand in, like, interviews.
Yeah, it's really sweet. The cast, it's Jessie May Lee who plays Alina, by the way.
It. Okay.
The cast exudes such incredible found family energy. Now, I will admit, I'm more of a Crows fan than I am for the main storyline. Like, all of my fanfics are Six of Crows related. And some of the first interviews with all six crows have just come out, because the sixth one was finally casted for this new season. And it's just so wonderful seeing them all together, because it seems like they just really love each other and love working together. And that means a lot.
Yes, I bet. So that's kind of the first thing I want to talk to you about before I dive into your fanfiction journey. Since you are a Six of Crows fanfiction writer / Grishaverse, because they're kind of the same thing, if I'm correct. The new season of Shadow and Bone is going to drop the day before this episode is released. So I wanted to know, like, were you a fan of the books before the show? What did you think of the first season? How are you feeling about the new season? Because, like, I just recently did an episode to kind of celebrate the second season, to, like, you know, promote it and, like, to tell people, like, go watch it. Like, it's a really good show. But I was super into, like, reading at the time where these books were coming out, but for some reason, I didn't actually get to reading the Grishaverse books, either the Shadow and Bones or the Six of Crows. So, like, I'm catching up, but I wasn't, like, in fandom, so I don't know what other people think. And Maya and I had, like, a very deep discussion on, like, the Darkling and, like, what we should feel about him, and we both had very different opinions. So, speaking to someone who is, as you said, very deep in the fandom, I just want to, like, know.
Yeah, of course. Okay, so actually, I was a little late to the journey. I watched the show first, actually. I saw season one very shortly after it came out.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a list of favorite characters, which I refer to as the trash train, because they are all sad, morally questionable boys.
Awesome.
And
we love to see it.
The first scene with Kaz, where he plants his cane on the table and, like, the camera pans around and goes up to his face, I was like, I don't know who that is, but that's my boy now.
I love that.
And, so I got, I think, two or three episodes into the show, and I found out that there were books about it. And I was like, okay, so the main plot line is good. It's pretty standard YA fare. But this group of criminals, that's what I'm excited about. And I found out that there were books about just them. So I went and read the Six of Crows duology.
Mm-hmm.
And just the writing is so good. I was absolutely obsessed. And I was excited about in retrospect, how the adaptation was actually, as adaptations go, really good. Okay. It has its flaws with some of the, like, mm-hmm. character nuances that it's really hard to carry over. Like how Kaz has this insanely complex internal monologue that right. contrasts with his exterior a lot, and right. it's really hard to do that when you can't read what his thoughts are, so mm-hmm. that kind of thing. But I mean, I'm really a fan of the show, as yeah. you can probably tell. Yes. And so I've been really into, like, all the theories about season two, and, yes. like, the soundtrack titles were just released, so trying to listen to the soundtrack and guess mm-hmm. what's happening in each scene, it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, I completely understand. I'm kind of in the same boat, but for Percy Jackson, I was, like, a Percy Jackson mm-hmm. kid. I grew up with it. Every new piece of information we get about the show, like, I go absolutely, absolutely fucking feral over. Just really, like, there's anything new information, like, the teaser trailer we got, like, I can't even imagine what I will be like and how much of an annoying monster I will be to my friends and family when, like, we get an actual trailer. So, like, I completely understand of, like, listening to the soundtrack and, like, watching all the in it, because I will be the exact same way. It's just, like, it's just gonna be, like, the best time of my entire life.
It's going to be, when interviews start coming out with that cast, it's going to be so fantastic. I was never as much into Percy Jackson as some mm-hmm. of my friends. I'm more of a casual fan, really. But I'm still definitely going to watch the show when it comes out. Another show I'm excited about, the live action Avatar The Last Airbender, which we've gotten yes. a bunch of castings for, but not yes. a lot more than that. But the cast looks amazing, so I'm also excited about that.
Yes, I love the cast, because Kira in Teen Wolf, she's gonna be in the Avatar, like, she was casted in Avatar oh. and I loved her in Teen Wolf, so I'm, like, really excited to see her in Avatar, especially since it was kind of a thing where Teen Wolf didn't treat her the best, so she didn't come back for, like, the new movie, which was great, because the movie sucked awful. It was, like, the worst thing I've ever seen. It was, like, really bad, which is so disappointing, because I love Teen Wolf. But I'm glad that she wasn't a part of it, and that she, like, stood her ground, because after she, like, declined that, she was given the opportunity to be a part of the live-action Avatar, which is, like, yes, like, that's exactly what it should be.
I think, I just looked it up, I think she's playing June, who's, like, the bounty hunter.
Oh my god, that's even better. Cool. I love that for her.
I think I'm remembering that correctly. But anyway.
Yeah. So I'm also really excited for that. But I understand, like, we haven't gotten a lot of information past casting. So, like, I am also, like, waiting, like, when can, like, we expect this thing? And yeah.
Yeah. Also, just the guy who's playing Zuko. Zuko is another one of my boys on the trash train.
Nice.
I'm so excited about that casting. Like,
yeah, it's going to be really good. But going back to your relationship with fan fiction, kind of tell me a little bit about your relationship with it, how you found it, like, originally the very first time, and then how did you get started reading and writing fan fiction?
Yeah, of course. So it is a long and tumultuous history.
Yes.
I was but a wee child when I discovered fan fiction for the first time, because I had been watching Winx Club, which they recently into a very bad, in my opinion, Netflix show.
Yes.
But that's
really
a story
bad,
for another
very,
day.
Yes.
And Tecna was my favorite character, which is one of the reasons I'm most mad about the Netflix show, because she wasn't in it. And in the main show, she really got very little screen time. There was like one plot line where she basically sacrificed herself to save everyone, and they had to go rescue her, that wasn't used as well as child me thought it should have been.
Sure.
So I went, and I had been writing stories about the characters and things that I liked in my little notebooks. So I went and I looked online to see if anyone else did that, and I discovered fanfiction.net. So I read me some subpar Winx Club fanfiction, because, like, what did I know?
Right.
And then it wasn't until, I guess, middle school that I got into How to Train Your Dragon, and that was just a massive obsession. It was like 2 or 3 years worth of me just driving everyone around me absolutely insane. I think Hiccup was the first boy on the trash train, probably.
Oh, I love that. I was also really obsessed with How to Train Your Dragon. I remember the first time I saw it in theaters, and I didn't really want to go, but my mom, like, took me and my younger sister, and I was, like, really mad about being there, and then the movie started, and I was just, like, I was like, oh my god, this is the best thing I've ever seen, and it was just, like, my personality for, yeah, like, about a year.
My best friend showed it to me the first time, and they're apparently making a live action of that now, which scares the crap out of me,
yeah,
but anyway.
Yeah, that, movies are so good, please don't touch them.
Yeah. That was when I first started writing fan fiction.
Okay.
I started out on fanfiction.net. That is the website that raised me.
Yes.
And I love to torture my favorite characters. I don't know why. Mm. I like to put them through difficult things because characters are like geodes, and to see the beauty of what they're really like, you must break them.
Yes.
So that was when I started, like, I think I made up this whole, like, fake illness that was basically just to cause everyone as much pain and, like, interesting drama as possible.
Right.
And my
right.
writing was deeply melodramatic. The comments I left on other people's stories were, like, annoying grammar corrections, and I would like to bleach my brain every time I think about them. But that was where that started for me. And then the next thing after that was Harry Potter.
Yes. I think it, again, for a lot of people at some point, it ends up at Harry Potter at some point.
Yeah. Fully obsessed.
Yes.
And that spans kind of a transition period for me, because over the course of me writing Harry Potter fan fiction, my writing improved so much. Mm-hmm. And I made the switch over to AO3. Because I was like, you know what? Before that, you know, I had been very intimidated, I think, by the filtering and tagging system.
Right.
And by some of the content that I knew was on there.
Right.
So this would have been, like, probably early high school by this point. Then I was like, you know what? There's good writing on here, and I want to be among it. So that's when I made my account on AO3. I wrote mostly Marauder stuff, but some, like, okay, Draco Redemption style things. And then a couple of things for musicals, because I, you know, once a theater kid, always a theater kid.
Yes.
And then I started on Six of Crows.
Very nice. So yeah, a very, like, kind of long, you've been through a couple fandoms. My interest is, like, you have been through a couple different types of fandoms. You started in, like, Winx Club, and then you moved to How to Train Your Dragon, and then you had, like, a period of these, like, musical, like you said, musical theater. I don't think we've ever had someone on here who's, like, truly written musical theater fan fiction before. So, like, what is that kind of transition of, like, were you deep into the Hamilton fandom when it was, like, at its popular? Like, were you kind of, like, were you with Shadow and Bone where, like, you weren't there, like, at the beginning, but then you gradually came into it?
I think with Hamilton, I was maybe a year or two behind the really massive okay. boom where everything got crazy and where most of the, like, cringe that people make fun of comes mm-hmm. from. I wasn't really involved in a lot of that, but I did, this wasn't my first entrance into it, but there was kind of a resurgence in 2020 when the Pro Shot came out on Disney Plus.
Right.
And so that was when I got more into reading fan fiction for it, and then writing a little bit of my own. I wrote one that was actually based on another one I wrote read that was an AU where the Hamilton survives the duel. And that one was much longer Ooh. Than mine. Mine was just like a speculative little one shot. It's called The Art of Sincerity, if anyone's right. interested. And then I also wrote some for Wicked after I saw it on the West End in London. Because it was just fantastic.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I thought the story was interesting enough that I could make something of it.
Well, Wicked seems to be one of the very few musical theater ones that I see a lot of fan fiction for. So I don't think you're alone in that. But when you watch a musical theater piece, because I know for a lot of people, there was like a shipping thing with Hamilton. You didn't seem to be of that. So did you kind of stick more with the canon storyline, just taking it in your own spin? Or even like with your Wicked One, it's it is Elphaba and Fiera, which is the ship in the, in the show.
I couldn't tell you why. Tend to be someone who, in general, respects the canon ships a little more. I don't usually go for a lot of things that aren't canon, with the exception of a post-canon Draco Luna that I wrote one time.
Oh, okay.
And the only way that ship works is post-canon.
Right.
But it was a, like, florist tattoo artist one, and I thought that was interesting. But,
very nice.
Yeah, with musicals, there's something that for some reason I feel like I need to adhere a little closer to the source material. And also, especially more contemporary musicals, they tend to be a little less formulaic than a lot of other forms of media.
Right.
So there are more relationships and storylines to explore beyond just the traditional romance. Like one of my Hamilton ones is called Promises, and it's Philip confronting his father after the publishing of the Reynolds pamphlet, just for example.
Right. So is that part of it that's more intriguing to you, is doing a deeper analysis and a deeper look into pieces of the musical that is just like, yeah, it would be interesting if, like for Year Two Fix, Philip confronting his father and then Alexander Hamilton like surviving.
Yeah, I do find that really interesting. I always prefer to go a layer beyond just the how many different ways can we write about these two people falling in love.
Right.
Now, I will read about those two people falling in love as many times as the internet has to offer, but when I'm writing, I like to explore into a little more depth.
Have you taken that into your other fandoms with, well, let's say Shadow and Bone is your main one right now. Have you taken that into your Shadow and Bone fanfics?
Yes, and that's not to say that they aren't romance-based, because the majority of them are. I am a absolutely massive Kinez shipper, and it might be my favorite ship of all time, because I think just the way that it's constructed and the symbolism and the pure uniqueness and the fact that they have to have this much dedication when they can't even touch each other is just incredible to me. But there's always something else, like the incredibly long one that I'm still working on right now, The Best Worst Kept Secret in Ketterdam, is one where they end up adopting a child, and so there's a lot of family building in that as well, which is interesting because they have very different relationships with their families, histories with their families, different ways of approaching family, and also some like difficult histories with that. So then you get a third prong of this, like, not only do I have to learn to trust and live with this other person, but also we are both trying to protect this child from the things that happened to us.
Right. Yeah, that is interesting. So I also wanted to kind of touch on, during your Harry Potter phase, you had told me that you started entering competitions on fanfiction.net. What was that like? What are competitions like in the fanfiction space?
I did. So fanfiction.net has a forums function, and people would run, usually during the summer, these competitions where every week, every 2 weeks, you would be given a prompt, or like a general theme. You know, sometimes it would be like one of them was Queen songs, or sometimes they would be more general. And then there would be a set of specifics. So like with Queen songs, you had to pick a specific song and kind of build a fan fiction, just like a short one shot around that song and quote a line from it. Or, you know, you would have to mention like a color and a certain object in your story. Something like that. And you could get feedback on them too, which really helped me to improve as a writer.
Right. I was gonna say, did that was that part of the reason it helped you improve as a writer, because it gave you such a narrow viewpoint to have to write in this specific way, or like you have to mention this specific thing? So it was like testing your skills as a writer a little bit.
Oh, it definitely did. And I improved over the course of those competitions as well. Plus, it was just really nice to have that community to kind of bounce things right. off of, because you could ask other participants to review your stories and give you feedback. And it opened a possibility to me of these communities in fan fiction and in fandom that I got into a lot more later, including some like text-based role-playing sites, which I also started doing on fanfiction.net. And then went off to various other forums after finding out that was a possibility.
Interesting. Did role-playing, because we've heard this from a couple of authors, that role-playing also helped their writing. Did you also possibly find that helpful in your writing journey?
Oh yeah, definitely. Because when I started doing it, I was literally just like with my friends, we were, you know, texting back and forth to each other. And then I found out that there were forums where people were doing this, and you could have your Harry Potter OC and write stories with other people's OCs that they were making. And I'm honestly, I'm still doing it. There's one that's called Inside New Hogwarts. It's a Pro Boards forum, but there are a lot of others, and it's a fun hobby to have. I really enjoy doing it.
Yeah, no, Maya does it a lot. She's specifically in like a Jujutsu Kaisen one right now.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's all on Discord, and she's like made some like really close friends off of it. That is just like, I don't know, like we've heard from a lot of fan fiction authors that it has helped them write, and it's a hobby that I never really considered to help in a writing sense as well. It's just being like a fun hobby where you like meet really cool people. But we've heard it from at least three other people now. So
yeah, I mean, I would absolutely agree with that. And you know, if if anyone out there is interested, I'm sure they're welcoming new members.
Yeah, no, I mean, probably. I think what Maya's told me, there's only ever one that is like that had closed off after she had gotten in. But most of the other ones, she's just had to like message them and say like, hey, like I want to be part of it, and then they, you know, like they let her in.
The one that I'm on has a forum website, and then there's a Discord attached to that that people use for plotting. But there's a lot of ways to do it, which also makes it really accessible to pretty much anyone who's interested.
Right. Yeah. So you, again, I mentioned before, have written for a lot of fandoms like How to Train Your Dragon, Harry Potter, Hamilton, Wicked, Six of Crows. Which has been your favorite universe to write for, and which has been the hardest?
Oh, that's okay. So I think you can guess by just the sheer number of things I've written. I think Six of Crows is my favorite because the source material is so well done that there's just so much character depth and so much symbolism to pull from. Honestly, I think Hamilton was the most difficult because you were walking such a fine line between fiction and actual history, which is where a lot of the like fandom cringe comes from.
Right.
Because you have to kind of decide like how much am I treating this like a work of fiction and how much do I want to respect as actual history.
Right. Yeah, that's always kind of, I don't even know how to like really describe my feelings about it, but it's always intrigued me because, yes, Hamilton has become like a musical and it's now a piece of media and it's not just really history anymore, but how you and other fanfiction artists toe that line between having this be history and like acknowledging the real history behind these people and then having fun in the media space that Lin-Manuel Miranda created.
Yeah, for me it was, for one thing, I played a lot in an AU space, which helps you to kind of leave that behind because you're saying that this is an alternate universe anyway. And then also sticking pretty closely to the story beats of the musical itself in kind of a missing moments sort of way, rather than expanding into the world of it at large.
Yeah, okay. I can see that better now. It was just always like I don't know how you guys like toe that line so delicately between the actual history and then the media that is created. Because I feel like there are very few that are, like, very giant fandoms, like, with a lot of fan fiction behind it that have to do that.
I mean, yeah, you kind of said it. You just do it very carefully. Because there's a weird relationship in the cultural moment we're having with respect to history already. Mm-hmm. So it's almost a personal decision of how do you want to treat that? How much do you want to respect it? Because some people have no problem with writing fanfic fully about real people. Right. And I have just quite never gotten there.
Sure. No, yeah.
So it just takes thought before you start interacting with whatever the piece of media is.
Right, and, like, obviously no one ever has to. That's the fun of fan fiction. It's just, like, you can do whatever you want, and, like, you don't ever have to step foot in the spaces you don't want to.
Exactly.
But for the one, for your Shadow and Bones, the most fun one, are you kind of stuck, and you want to be stuck, in the Six of Crows, the Inej and Kaz, like, or has part of you ever wanted to, like, expand with, like, maybe writing, like, something with Jasper, or even something with, like, the actual Shadow and Bone, like the original trilogy crew?
I mean, the original trilogy has never drawn my interest as mm-hmm. much. I've read some sort of usually modern AU type things where all of the characters are there, and so people from the original trilogy show up.
Right.
If I were going to write anything outside of Six of Crows, it would be more likely the King of Scars, Nikolai and Zoya, okay. who are also in the original books. Or maybe if I were to do something other than Kaz and Inej. Well, I do have one called To Meet a Monster that's just the story of Kaz getting his cane and what that the guy who made it must have been thinking. But I think it might be interesting to get into either Jesper or Wyland's backstories a little bit and just do kind of a character study. Because I did a character study of Inej that was a songfic of She Used to Be Mine from Waitress. Okay. And that was really interesting. I love character studies, so I'd gladly do more of those.
What do you love about character studies so much?
I think it just gets into what I was talking about earlier with the emotional weight and doing the deep dive into the character's past and their way of thinking about things and approaching life and all the symbolism that applies to them. And especially when the source material has them so well fleshed out, that gives you a lot to play with. It's why I like role play so much, because the whole thing is so heavily based on character development, and characters are my favorite piece of writing.
Same. If a story or if any piece of media has compelling characters, that is where I will be drawn in almost all the time. And is that where your, I don't remember what you called it, but like your home of broken boys kind of thing also comes in, where you just have like a draw to these characters with more sad backstories and more sad endings and XYZ?
Yeah, it's the trash train. I have a friend who embroiders, and she made me a little plaque to hang on my door that says "Welcome to the Trash Train." I mean, I think now there's a really interesting quote about something about the horrible banality of pain and how sadness is really a mundane thing, but in media traditionally, you know, sadness and tragedy tend to be used to make a character more interesting, which in terms of character development and study gives you a whole lot to work with. Now, I think there's the possibility for a character to be made interesting by, like, happiness and joy and the light that they're bringing into the world. That's just very underutilized.
Sure, yeah. I don't know how deep, but my sister and I really love the Hunger Games trilogy. It is, I think, where my kind of the similar love that you have for Shadow and Bone was where I had for, like, the Hunger Games. And we were having a conversation last night specifically about, like, you know, the Gale versus Peeta or whatever. And, like, Gale really doesn't have anything super tragic about him. Not that it makes him less compelling, but I think that's what makes a character like Peeta Mellark, in the way that you said, where it's like there's a lot of tragedy behind him and there's a lot of trauma there, but he also chooses that joy and that light, which just makes him like such a, like a much better character.
Yeah, I found the quote. It's the banality of evil and the terrible boredom of pain. But at any rate, yeah, I don't know. I just tend to find characters more compelling when they're being driven by the ways that they've been hurt before, or they've hurt others, and right. you know, regrets they have and things that bind them. It's a great way to make them more interesting.
Right. So do you prefer a character both in the same sense of they have been hurt in the past, there's a lot of trauma there, who kind of end up as the villain, or those who choose like hero-dom or anti-hero-dom, or those who just don't, like, they're not like the main villain?
I don't know. I never seem to be one who's drawn to the heroes or the villains necessarily. Mm-hmm. The characters I like tend to be the ones who think they want to be the villain and then quickly get in over their heads. Like, the sixth Harry Potter movie is my favorite because Draco spends most of it just wrestling with right. his pride and this choice that he's made and the fact that he's not going to be able to do it and how afraid he is and just, like, you know, crying in the room of requirement.
Right.
I think that's really interesting.
You're right, like, they get it in over their head. They really don't know what they're doing.
And, you know, there's a reason every musical starts with an I want song, because your character right. has to have a motivation. But when the character doesn't want what they think they want, that can take the story to whole new interesting places.
Right, right. So, for your fan fiction, you've written quite a bit, but it's not like, we've definitely had people who've written like millions and millions and millions of things. Is there a trope that you have yet to try your hand at that you really want to? And then on the other side of the coin, is there a trope that you wouldn't touch, like, ever?
Oh, that's a really interesting question. There are definitely some AUs that I haven't tried yet. Mm-hmm. I haven't written the traditional coffee shop AU, but okay. one that I think is really interesting is the Regency era ones. So it's like, ooh, here's your favorite okay. characters, but they're in a Jane Austen novel now.
Yes.
It would take a lot of research, but I think it would be really fun. Actually, no, wait, I'm changing my answer. Soulmate okay. AUs. I've never written a soulmate AU, and I love them with all of my heart, and I need to write one. One that I'm scared of, I don't know if this is too vague, but really just anything super smutty. I'd rather, okay. Or like the porn without plot specifically. I'd okay. rather deal with emotions. I kind of find that boring and sometimes mm-hmm. uncomfortable. Like I'd rather there be story involved, you know?
Yeah, no, I understand. As an emotion girl myself, who has only written like a handful of smut, and like that smut has entirely been like emotion based, like it's never just been like down dirty, no one cares about the other person, it's just like a porn without plot kind of situation, I completely understand, like, emotion has to be there. On the flip side, as a soulmate lover myself, it's my favorite like AU trope, whatever, it's my favorite of all time. Mine, I've never written it also, but mostly because I want something to be, like, really original, because as much as I will eat up every single piece of Soulmate AU content under the sun, I would want to write something that, like, hasn't been done before, and I just haven't thought about that yet, where it's like, we've done the red string, we've done, like, the showing, like, the paint, if you draw on your body, it shows up on your soulmate's body, we've seen, like, the first words your soulmate speaks to you or somewhere on your body. Like, we've seen all those, and I just haven't been able to think of, like, an original idea for it.
Well, I have an idea for one that I've been, not an original trope, but a story that I've been sitting on for a while. Mm-hmm. So the thing with Kaz and Inej is that they both have this extensive trauma for different reasons,
right.
where they have a lot of trouble, touching each other. Like, it takes yes. a lot of work to not completely panic. And there's this one soulmate of you where the first place that your soulmate, you're born with a mark, the first place your soulmate touches you is black. And then when they touch it, it turns into all of these bright colors. And I think it could just be so interesting with them yes. being like, how do I have this mark if no one can ever touch me? And right. then, and like trying to hide it. And then when it finally happens, just, I think it would be really cool.
No, I think you're completely right about that, because I don't know too much about Kazan and Nej because I have read the books, but that piece of their relationship I know, I think, the most about, because I think it's the one piece that's the most like this is them, they cannot touch each other, and that which makes it so much better.
Yeah, so I should write that. I've been sitting on the idea for a while because I have yet to work out specifics, but I just think it would be so interesting.
Right. Well, you also probably haven't written it because you are currently writing your fic, The Best Worst Kept Secret in Ketterdam, which is not only your yes. longest fic that you've published on AO3, but also your most popular. And I want to know, what has that experience been like? Not only in terms of keeping yourself accountable to this very long fic, but also with the reception that it has received.
It's been so amazing. And I don't know yeah. how to say this in a way that everyone else doesn't say it. But I saw this, I was watching fanfiction TikToks recently, as you do, and I mm-hmm. saw one saying, like, if you want to find the really good fics, you sort by kudos, and then you go to, like, the fourth or fifth page. And I went yes. to the fourth page, and it was there, and I was like, have I yes. made it? Have I, does this mean, like, yes. does this mean that I did it?
I think you have.
Because I've even seen one of my other ones, I think it was Renegades in the Ring, got recommended by someone in like a Pinterest comment section. Wow. And I felt so incredible. But what honestly my favorite thing is when there are new people finding it all the time. So sometimes just in the middle of the week, I'll get like 20 random emails that someone is just going through and commenting on every chapter. And yes. the comments are always so good. Like, that's the other thing about AO3 is that on FFN, usually you have people being like, oh my god, that was so crazy. Like, update please. Ah, they kissed. And then on AO3, you have people writing these whole freaking English mm-hmm. essays in your comment sections
yeah.
and just analyzing the characters and pointing out things you didn't even know you did. Mm-hmm. And they're just so incredible. I have people who've been with me from chapter one and they're still yeah. commenting, and it's amazing.
Yeah. Well, we've had Chell on, who's Destinies on AO3, and she writes specifically Dark Lena fanfiction. And she wrote this Dark Lena fanfiction like before the show came out, and she welcomed and harbored a lot of new people who came in from the TV show. So I like, is that something that you ever think of, is like people who are finding the show because the second season's coming on, people are going to be finding the show, watching both seasons, and then looking up the fan fiction, and then like, boom, yours is going to be there.
That's, I mean, I would be lying if I said I wasn't hoping for that.
Yeah.
Because right now we are, 158,000 words in. So, I mean, it's a lot, and I know yeah. some people are intimidated by really long fics, but I would love to welcome more people into yeah. the family. I did a whole reread of it myself recently, just to be like, okay, you know, am I forgetting details that I put in past chapters? Mm-hmm. How much has my writing changed over this? Are there things I can reference as I'm going forward? And it's just crazy to think about new people experiencing that for the first time when I wrote the beginning chapters so long ago.
Right. How do you keep yourself accountable for something like that? Because before, you had just written a lot of one shots, and then your second longest fic, Moonflowers, which is your Draco Luna one, is like about like 20,000 words, and now you have something that is like 5, 6, 7 times that amount of words. So how do you keep yourself not only accountable, but like accountable enough that you update like on a weekly basis?
Yeah, I set myself up on a schedule, and originally I was actually updating twice a week. It was like Monday, Wednesday, wow. Friday. I would skip whichever one was in the middle. So I would do like Monday and then Friday and then
okay. Yeah.
And then that got too crazy. So I cut right. it down to once a week. But my method of keeping myself accountable has always been to attach that responsibility to another person, because I really hate letting people down, even if they're just strangers on the internet that I've never met. And just knowing that there are people waiting to read this, I'm like, I have to do this. I have to update this week. I've taken I'm almost done with my second short hiatus right now, and I have hated both of them. But when the choice was between releasing something on time but having it be kind of short and subpar, rather than taking a few weeks off to recover from real life and then giving them something actually good, I was like, you know, people deserve better than this. So I just have to trust that they'll be okay and I'll be back in time for season two to come out.
Right. Going back to what you said in the very beginning of this recording, when you said, like, the hyperfixation leaves, how much do you have left for The Best Kept Secret in Ketterdam? And do you ever worry that the hyperfixation will leave before you are finished? Maybe not now with the second season coming out, but even still.
I mean, I definitely have had that fear, but I also, at least with my other old fandoms, I always seem to be able to sort of wake it up again. Like, if I go read some fan fictions, I look at some fan art, I listen to some playlists that people have made. Sometimes I go back and I reread or rewatch the source material. And I think especially with the second season coming out, there's a lot of excitement happening around that. So plus it helps that it's not an endless thing. I do have an outline that I'm trying to find right now. The outline currently is 109 chapters, and we're on chapter 76. So I'm a pretty good chunk of the way there. Like, the end is within sight. And I'm very excited about the ending that I've had planned for a very long time. So we're gonna make it.
I love to hear that. Do you have any plans for what comes afterwards? Like, what, maybe a story that you want to, like, dig your teeth into, or maybe taking some time off, or just what do you have, if you have any plans after that? Or right now you're just like, I'm just trying to finish this.
Well, first thing, I guess I should probably write that soulmate AU I was talking about. And then after that, maybe there'll be another fandom that catches my interest. I have no idea, but it'll definitely, it'll be relaxing. I'll miss all of the engagement, I think. But maybe new people will keep finding it. Who knows?
Right. And you want to hope that the people who subscribe to you personally and not the fan fiction, like, continue on with you.
Yeah, and I know there definitely are some. Like, there are people who have gone from that and read my other Six of Crows fics, and sometimes even the ones in other fandoms that they're also in, which is always very exciting. So,
yeah, we love that. Who knows? Who knows? But you know what? We love our readers. So what has been the best writing advice that you've ever come across that you would like to share with other writers listening right now?
Oh, that's a really good question. Man, I should have prepped for this. I'm trying to think. So most of the writing advice I've seen is stuff people... I don't know if this technically counts as writing advice, but I was reading an interview with an author that I really like one time. And she was talking about the power of surprising your readers. And it doesn't have to be, like, a huge plot twist that, you know, you sowed the seeds for and suddenly it's all coming together. It can be something as simple as an original description. And the sentence that she gave as an example was from something she'd read recently that described something as keyhole black. Mm-hmm. And it's such a tiny thing, but that one sentence just about... That one tiny descriptor just about sold me on the whole book without even knowing what it was about, because it's just so creative and it's so original and it's such a tiny thing, but it tells me that the whole thing is coming from this very original and sort of delightfully surprising place of mind. Surprise your readers, but the best thing is when you do it in ways that they see coming, kind of. they are not see coming, but like look back and go, why didn't I notice that?
Right. No, I fully know what you understand. I love reading books, watching movies, reading fan fictions where maybe you consume that media again for the second time and you then start picking things up that you never even realized were important in the beginning.
That's why I love doing rereads and rewatches. Because now you know the plot twists and the backstories.
Right, right.
So as you're going through, you can see all the tiny crumbs of, like, I rewatched Shadow and Bone after I had read the Six of Crows books, mm-hmm. and just seeing all the little nods to the character details and backstories in the books that we hadn't gotten to yet was such a cool experience.
I bet. I love doing that. There are a couple that I read, like, a couple movies that I reread or rewatch. And picking up those, like, little crumbs, like I said, with the Hunger Games, I recently, my sister and I, like, watched them twice back to back. I don't know why we did that to ourselves, but we did. And it wasn't until after we rewatched it the second time that in the last two movies, which is Mockingjay, she's holding the small pearl that, like, PETA gave to her in Catching Fire, like throughout the movie. And it's something that, like,
oh, wow.
you don't really notice the first time.
Yeah. Which reminds me, I need to do a reread of Ninth House and Hellbent, which are by the author of Six of Crows. They're her nice. Adult novels, and I love them dearly.
Yeah. No, for what I hear, she's an incredible writer, and I do eventually need to read some of her books.
She is. I look up to her a lot. Plus, Ninth House is one of the staple, like, dark academia books.
Ooh.
And I'm very much on that side of Pinterest, so I feel like I kind of have to keep my nerd cred and read it.
Sure. I mean, like, that's fair. You know, that's I think that's pretty fair. So we have a YN's choice, so a fairy tale's choice. Of the fics that you have written, what is your favorite and why?
Oh, that's really hard. I have, like, three that I would pick from. I think... four. Oh, God, that's hard. Okay. So I think I'm going to say Renegades in the Ring, which is one of my Six of Crows one-shots. And it's very found family focused. It's an alternate universe where instead of having these various, like, these traumas and these difficult things happen to mm-hmm. them, the characters are all sort of circumvented by fate at a younger age, and they all end up in a traveling circus together, and it's Ooh. Nice to see the things that stay the same that way, like the friendships and the relationships that are unchanged by this shift in fate, as it were.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think I would say that one.
That's interesting, because for a lot of authors we bring on to the podcast, and then we'll ask them that question, because we ask all of our guests that question, they almost always say, like, their biggest fic. So, like, I was kind of expecting you to say the best kept secret in Ketterdam, but I do really love that you said another one of your fics instead.
Yeah, I definitely thought about that one, but I think there's something about, I don't know, having the quality more densely packed almost, because when something mm-hmm. is shorter, every word has to count.
Yes. Absolutely, absolutely. And I honestly really admire people who can write really short fics that pack so much of a punch, because I cannot. I only write the longest of fan fictions ever. And so those, I really look up to people who can be able to do that, because it's just like, you were able to pack so much into such a small story, and it's such an admirable trait.
Well, I have some Harry Potter drabbles that are incredibly short and incredibly niche. Like, one is a Merope Gaunt one, for example, and one of them has a character in it who's, like, a one-off mentioned in one sentence. And, of course, you know, they don't get a big reception or anything. But I just think it's a fun space to play in, because it's the only pressure comes from, again, it's like poetry. You have to make every word count.
Right. Well, I mean, even I feel like your days in the competition space probably helped with that, because you'd have to write pretty short one-shots.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Sometimes they would require us to write, like, 500 words, and that's all you get. It's just a drabble. So that was always a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, but it helped your skills at the end of the day, so.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And then our last question, unfortunately our last, what is your favorite fan fiction or the fan fiction that you would recommend the most?
The most overall. Wow, that's hard because I know I gave you like three recommendations in yes. the email conversation no, you can, that we had.
You can give me all three. That's the thing is like we started okay. off this, our very first guest that we had on. We had like no expectations. We had no idea what we were doing. We were just like, we have these questions for you. And we're like, what is your favorite fic? And she gave us three. And so we were like, that's pretty fair. I don't know any fan fiction reader or writer that could limit it down to one. So we're like, I don't even think I could limit mine down to one. So like, that's why in the email that I sent you, I said 1 to 3, because like, it's pretty unfair to be like, you have to give me your first favorite child and that's it.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
So let's see. So I think my favorite Six of Crows fanfic, it's called Latte Art. I don't know how I would pronounce this username, but it's spelled PYRRHLC. I always say kind of like Pyrrhic in my head. Okay. Anyway, the author has a bunch of great modern AUs, but that one is my favorite. And then I mentioned Haikyuu very briefly earlier. I've never written anything for it, but I read a lot. I Remember How the Earth Stopped Turning by Roxest is incredible. Lots of like sort of purple prose, so it takes Ooh. Some deep reading to understand it, but once you do, it's mind-blowing. And then Salvage by Muffin Lance is an Avatar The Last Airbender one. They're a very popular author in that fandom, and they have a bunch of great fics, but once again, that one's my favorite.
Very nice. I myself love a purple prose. Do you know what like ship or the relationship for that Haikyuu fanfiction is? Because I love a purple prose.
Yes, it's actually, it's not a ship fic, although it could be read that way. It's a Kageyama centric. It's set post canon. It's a career ending injury fic. So lots of that, that pain.
Yeah.
And, internal monologue that I like.
That you love so much.
Yes. And I, there's a lot of just like friendships between the characters and really interesting mm-hmm. relationships that are explored. Like his sister and Hinata are kind of yeah. helping take care of him. And then a bunch of his old teammates and rivals are kind of stepping in as well. And, there was something else I was going to say about it. But anyway, it's fantastic.
Yes. Oh, I just looked up the Salvage. I know exactly what this one is.
Yeah, that's the Zuko ends up on Hakoda's ship and they adopt him.
Yes.
One. It's so good. It's so great.
That was one we have definitely gotten it recommended to us a handful of times where people are like, here's this list, also Salvage. And that's one that like I really like to focus on a fandom that has something new coming out on it, which is why I focused on Shadow and Bone and read a Shadow and Bone fanfiction for this month because the new season's coming out. So that's yeah. why like I need to know when that new Avatar The Last Airbender live action show is coming out, because then I'll be able to be like, I will read Salvage. Like, do not worry, everyone who has ever recommended it to us, I'm going to read Salvage.
Yeah. The author I mentioned for Six of Crows has a whole series that's set in the same modern AU, and Latte yeah. Art is the first one. It is the classic coffee shop AU. Ugh. And what I love about it is that, like that thing I was mentioning earlier, their descriptions are simple, but they're original and they hit so hard. It's yes. just gorgeous.
Yeah, I love a coffee shop AU. I love all of these. I will be keeping my eye out on all of them. But thank you so much for coming. It was so fun talking to you. You're very well spoken about like your fan fiction and what you love writing, and the fandoms that you love.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. I guess that's sort of a benefit of being a writer is yeah. that you learn how to use words very well, which helps yes. me a lot in my daily life.
Yeah, I bet. I know. As someone who writes for a living, it helps. But is there anything that you would like to promote while you're here? Your both of your writing platforms, any social media, anything like that?
Yeah, well, obviously my AO3, the best worst kept secret in Ketterdam, is still in progress, but I have a whole host of other things on there. Mm-hmm. And then I have a fandom Instagram which is fairytales_of_forever. The underscores are important. I had to put them in because the username the whole way is someone's personal account. I will occasionally post like fan art or short fics on there, and I repost news from the fandom and that kind of thing.
Very nice. Thank you so much for talking to me. I enjoyed it so much. And thank you for informing me all about Shadow and Bone, because I am such a big fan, but I know very little and I just want to know everything.
Yes, of course. I could talk about it for hours.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Canonically Incorrect. You can follow us on Twitter and TikTok and Instagram and Tumblr. You can send us your fanfiction recommendations, or if you're a fanfiction author that would like to be on our show, email us at canonicallyincorrectpod@gmail.com. If you would like to support us, you can donate a one-time donation at ko-fi.com/canonicallyincorrect. You can subscribe to our Patreon monthly at patreon.com/canonicallyincorrect. Thank you to our Patreons, Autumnal River and Riley C, for your continued support.
Donate to AO3!
And we'll see you guys next time!
Bye! Bye.